This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from Donna Brazil, the Louisiana political consultant, graduate of Louisiana State University, and former national chair of the Democratic National Committee. Donna Brazil with some thoughts about the U.S. Senate race as Mary Landrieu seeks a fourth term and whether or not Democrats nationally will retain control of the U.S. Senate. Also, Jim Caldwell from the Baton Rouge Airport on the new look and some other matters involving air travel in this area. And we're scheduled to hear from Brenda Perry and Andrew Vogel regarding the Renaissance at the Lincoln Theater, the historic edifice on Myrtle Street that is still in disrepair, but maybe better times are ahead. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, it's 877-217-5757 and inkstershow@wrkf.org online. Our guest to begin is Donna Brazil, graduate of Louisiana State University, grew up in Kenner, and has become a fixture in American politics for more than a quarter century, starting at an extremely young age in the highest levels of politics in our country, and she is the former chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee. Good morning, Donna Brazil.
Hey, Jim, it's a great honor to talk to you, and I wanted to just put one little edit in your introduction. I am a proud graduate of Louisiana State University.
Well, we graduated on the same day.
I know, boo. Thank the Lord.
And you've done better than anybody else in that class, I'm sure, and you're still active. And Donna, of course, is a person of many talents, has even appeared on House of Cards and The Good Wife, so I'm sure you've added that to your many political credits.
I have, and after all these years in politics, I'm best suited for the Game of Thrones. I've seen just about everything but dragons.
Well, we go back to you being in the news in 1988. You were with Michael Dukakis in 1988, and I'm going to do a little segue here. The principal, or the person who's considered to be the principal challenger to Mary Landrieu, Bill Cassidy, he was a Dukakis backer in a big way, writing letters to the editor, supporting the man from Massachusetts for president in 1988, attacking President Reagan in his letters to the editor. But somewhere along the way, Bill Cassidy had an epiphany. He became a Republican, and now he is, according to some, the favorite to unseat Mary Landrieu. What's going on in your home state, Donna Brazil?
Well, as you know, I'm a big fan of Senator Mary Landrieu. In addition to serving as her intern when she was in the state legislature, I came home back in 1987 to help run her first statewide campaign for state treasurer. Mary Landrieu is, I think, an exceptional human being. I watched her during those many weeks and months following Hurricane Katrina. There was no one, in my judgment, and I saw everything, there was no one who was more committed to the rebuilding of Louisiana and the Gulf Coast than Senator Mary Landrieu. She worked not only side by side with the governor at the time, Kathleen Babineau Blanco, the mayor of New Orleans, who Ray Nagin, but she worked with Ted Cochran in Mississippi, Trent Lott in Mississippi, Haley Barbour in Mississippi, and yes, George W. Bush, who was the president at the time. Senator Landrieu has, I think, what it takes to continue to lead Louisiana in the 21st century. She's a leader on tough issues like energy issues. She stood by us, Jim, when, you know, the federal government tried to raise our flood rates. Mary is the only one who will go to the well of the Senate and pause everyone to focus on the people of Louisiana, working families. So I'm a strong supporter of Mary. Look, I know she has many opponents, many critics, people who simply don't like her because she wears a Democratic label. Let me just tell you, her label is Louisiana through and through. She's a homegirl. She's tough. And, Jim, that's just how I feel. I don't care about Mr. Cassidy in terms of his epiphany and whatever other beliefs he has, because when it came time to lead, when it came time to help Louisiana rebuild, and when we need somebody who will fight for all Louisianians, not just those who are backing him with big corporate cash, Mary is the person.
All right, well, you're making a case for her re-election, Donna. You're making a case for her re-election, but obviously she's in trouble. She's barely hanging on, according to people like Charlie Cook, who now rate this race as leaning Cassidy. Why is she in trouble if she's done such a great job?
Well, I think there's been so many attempts to smear her name, smear her record, but you cannot wipe away all of the things that she has done on behalf of Louisianians. I'm not just standing up for mayor because I happen to be a Democrat, although that's true. I'm not standing up for mayor because I happen to be a woman, although that's true as well. I'm standing up for her because when the rubber hit the road and when you need somebody to help bail you out and pull you up and lift you up, whether it's education, health care, and yes, energy and the environment, is Senator Landrieu. She has demonstrated, in my judgment, what it takes to lead Louisiana in the 21st century. You know, I'm proud each and every day to have a senator that I call not just a friend, but she's a friend of working families in Louisiana. And she's going to have to fight hard because Louisiana is a red state. And we know that when you compete in what I call non-presidential years, you have to motivate people. You have to persuade them to vote for you. And I think if Mary can continue the kind of outreach that she's been doing, reach out to people who might not know her record, who are listening to those shameful commercials. People are just saying nasty things behind people's back. You notice I didn't say one nasty thing about Mr. Cassidy. This is not about who can be the nastiest, who can demonize, but who will stand up for Louisiana values, Louisiana education, the opportunity for Louisiana citizens, be they boy or girl, to be able to compete with boys and girls from all over America and all across the world. And that's Senator Landrieu, because she cares about everybody in Louisiana, not just those who vote for her, but those who need the kind of leadership that she provides to a state like Louisiana. That's why I'm for Mary Landrieu.
All right, 297-5633 for Donna Brazil, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Donna also worked as a member of the board of the Louisiana Recovery Authority, both under the administrations of Kathleen Blanco and Bobby Jindal. She served as a lecturer at the University of Maryland, College Park, a fellow at Harvard University's Institute of Politics, and is an adjunct professor of women and gender studies at Georgetown. So she is a busy person and wrote a best-selling autobiography about her life and times in American politics. How did you get to the apex of the political scene so quickly? You were in your early 20s when you were working for campaigns for President of the United States. How did this happen?
Well, Jim, as you know, I had an opportunity back at home, back on campus at LSU. I supported Billy Guss for Attorney General of Louisiana. I was very active, not just in Jefferson Parish, but Orleans Parish. I was born at Charity Hospital. I've had a knack for politics since I was a little girl. I don't know, maybe it's in that water we all drink called the mighty Mississippi. But it's just a wonderful state to grow up in. I tell everybody I'm a proud Louisianian. I'm proud of the public schools in Louisiana that educated me and so many kids who needed a head start and a healthy start in life. But I got involved, and then, of course, I interned for Russell. Gillis Long. I was my friend's intern for Russell. I didn't make that cut. I made the other cut. And then I worked for Kathy Long, Lindy Boggs. Let me just tell you this. This is the strangest thing. But all my adult life, until I got to work for Reverend Jesse Jackson, 84, I worked for conservative or moderate Democrats, people who knew how to cross the aisle and get cooperation from the other side because they came up with common sense solutions. They weren't trying to appease one faction or one tiny segment of the electorate. They were trying to do what was good for everybody, and that's how I got involved, and that's why I'm still involved and still engaged. I want to encourage every young person, be they Republican, independent, or Democrat, to seek public office, to serve their state, serve their communities, because that's important. The Bible said, to whom much is given, much is required. And I feel like most people who are blessed, that I want to give back and lift up the next generation of Americans to serve as well.
Well, you mentioned Jesse Jackson. That's 30 years ago, 1984, and he ran a strong campaign that year, finishing third in the Democratic primary behind Walter Mondale and Gary Hart. But he carried Louisiana. The Louisiana primary.
I came home for that one.
You take credit for that one?
Hell yeah, I take credit for a lot of things. Because I got the wounds and all of the scars to show that I was home. And luckily, we had a good team of people in Louisiana led by, as you all know, we had strong leaders in the state legislature. The Louisiana Legislative Black Caucus had a lot of support there, Cleo Fields, and many, many others. But, you know, I think about Ben Jeffers. I think about the AFL-CIO. I think about Avery Alexander, Diana Bejois. I can go back. I mean, I go back, Jim. As you know, my hair is no longer the color it was when you last saw me.
Well, I see you frequently. You're everywhere. Donna Brazil, who is the pride of Louisiana and Louisiana State University. So what has to happen for Democrats to retain control of the United States Senate after this election cycle?
There's no question that this is going to be a very tough race. Democrats understand that we have three things that are not in our favor. And if you're an educator like myself, you know that these topics sometimes can be complicated in the classroom. The first is math. We have 21 seats that are up. And some of our most important figures, like Mr. Rockefeller of West Virginia, has decided to retire. Mr. Levin of Michigan, retiring. Mr. Harkins in Iowa, retiring. Mr. Johnson in South Dakota, retiring. And so we have to not just try to fill those seats, but we have seats in what I call states that Mitt Romney carried in 2012. Mark Pryor in Arkansas to our north, he's going to have a tough time, but he'll pull it out. Like Senator Landrieu, he has a good brand, and I think people will choose common sense politics over extreme politics. Ms. Hagan in North Carolina, another so-called red state, although I think there's a lot of purple in that state, she's going to have a tough time, but she's going to pull it off because people want somebody who will fight for them and not just fight for the 10% of the people who give them the money. Mr. Warner in Virginia, you know, he got a Republican challenger, but I think he'll pull it off. And we got two dynamic women. Allison Grimes in Kentucky, who is still neck and neck with Mitch McConnell. I think the Bluegrass State is going to look for some somebody like Allison London Grimes, a statewide official who I think has the right formula for what will make Washington a more successful place in terms of getting things done. And Michelle Nunn, the daughter of former Senator Nunn, she is running in Georgia. Now, Georgia is a very interesting dynamic state. It's red, but I think that red is fading, and maybe because the football teams are not that good, and I'm not just referring to the Falcons. But I hope that Michelle Nunn and Allison Grimes are able to pull it off, and if so, it might be a night where we see, you know, the Republicans pick up one or two. I think the people in South Dakota probably forgot that they had a Democrat in the Senate, but that's going to be tough. Montana's going to be tough. I think Mr. Begich in Alaska is going to pull it off. Yeah, well, you know, if Sarah Palin says one or two more things, who knows, he might win by a landslide. She's not his opponent, but anybody who receives her blessing will clearly have the motivation to seek out the extremists there. But I think Mr. Begich has a broad record that will appeal to most Alaskans. So it's going to be a close contest all across the country. But at the end of the night, I think we can hold our heads up high, because I think Democrats will be able to overcome math. That's the topic I mentioned. Geography, because many of these states are red states and states that Mitt Romney carried. And then history. History is the thing that compounds and confounds any second-term president. About the second year, the sixth year of a two-term president, people are like ready to look at what's next. And so President Obama is underwater in many of these states, but the good news is that Mary Landrieu is above water, or at least above his numbers in terms of polling. Michelle Nunn, same thing. Allison Grimes, same thing. So we got some things in our favor, but math, history, geography. Think of those three topics and say, my God, them Democrats going to have a hard night trying to get through this exam.
Donna Brazil is our guest. She'll be with us for a few more minutes. We'll take a short break and wrap it up with the lady from Kenner by way of LSU, who has taken the American political scene by storm for a quarter century. Donna Brazil, the author of Cooking with Grease. That was her autobiography 10 years ago. Great book. Back in 90 seconds with Donna. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area, 877-217-5757. Donna Brazil is with us, the fabulous political consultant, fabulous if you like her, perhaps not fabulous if you don't like her. And Donna, you have acknowledged through the years that a time or two you have ticked off people, you say, in every state. You're somebody who speaks your mind.
Well, look, I love people. I love every human being I can possibly put my hands around. I'm a Christian woman. I'm full of faith in God, and I make mistakes. I ask God all the time for guidance, for wisdom, at times I don't get along with myself sometimes. I get upset with what I do, but I try to improve myself. And I try to find ways to be a better human being each and every day of my life. So, but this is politics. And, you know, Jim, one of the things that I learned as a student at LSU, you know, I served in the student government with Mike Futrell, who turned out to be a Republican. But you know what? I still love Mike Futrell. I love him. He may not claim the fact that the two of us worked very closely together. We were kids. Mike Futrell was the president of SGA, and when Mike wanted something, I delivered. So, and then he became a Republican, and I still like Mike Futrell because I like his value system. I like the fact that he still went to LSU football games and acted a fool because that's what I did, too. We all did. Hell, I don't remember half the things I did when I was at the game, and I'm not going to tell you why. But, I enjoy who I am and what I've been able to do, and I want to do more. I'm 54 years old, and I still feel like, Elizabeth Taylor in that movie, a cat on a hot tin roof.
You were the campaign manager for Albert Arnold Gore when he ran for president in 2000 and won the popular vote by over 500,000 votes and lost by 537 votes, controversially, in the state of Florida, which cost him the election, and the U.S. Supreme Court voted 5-4 for George Bush. How would the world have been different if Gore had been elected?
Well, you know, Al Gore was a very decent human being. He was a courageous human being. I think he gave of his time and his energy to public service. I think Al Gore would have continued to focus his attention on the economy. Clearly, 9/11 occurred under the leadership of George W. Bush, and President Bush had to make some difficult decisions. We're still living with many of those decisions. Not all those decisions were bad decisions in terms of making sure America was safe and secure. But, you know, did we go too far on some things like national security and surveillance? Maybe we can dial it back a little. Maybe we cannot. Those are things that is the Patriot Act still needed? Those are things that we can dial back a little bit but have a conversation about. Al Gore might have led differently. He might have put more emphasis in the aftermath of 9/11 on improving diplomatic relations with certain countries and not alienating people. He may not have embraced torture as a way to get information out of those we suspected of crimes against the United States. There's so many what-ifs. The truth of the matter is that we've moved forward as a country. We now have President Obama. We're in his sixth year. We got two more years. And there are certain things we need to do as a country that is beyond what I call the political warfare of the moment and focus on how do we educate our children, how do we keep our country safe and secure, how do we prepare for this global society that we live in now, the global marketplace, so that American goods and American products can be sold at a reasonable price? Do we import? Can we export more of our petroleum products? Is that the right thing to do? Are we doing right by climate change? So there are so many important issues that I think we're missing often because we're into demonizing people, labeling people, saying we don't like people when we're not even listening to what the other side has to say.
A couple of questions from listeners, and we'll let you go. Missy asks, what's your most vivid memory at LSU?
Oh, man, Free Speech Alley. I love Free Speech Alley. I used to enjoy that on a Friday afternoon, and then afterwards, you know, we did what we had to do. I love living at Evangeline Hall. I enjoyed that, the long walks on campus. I enjoyed LSU Library. And, Jim, I guess I'm going to make an announcement. LSU has not made the announcement, but I am going to turn over all my manuscripts to the LSU Library. And the reason why, for our archival purposes, of course, I want people to know whether they come from Kenner, or they're born at Cherry Hospital or Mercy, I want them to know that they can grow up and become anything and anyone they wish to and desire to be if they get the education. I want them to see not just the books, the materials, listen to the strategy sessions that I had with Al Gore. I want them to see how we helped to make Dr. King's birthday a national holiday. I want to see the notes that I had between Coretta Scott King and Ronald Reagan. I got all of that plus a lot more that I'm going to contribute to LSU starting this year. My 30 years in American politics, I want to return it back to the campus where I got so much of my life and so much of my activism from, growing up around such great people, great faculty, great, as Jim, as you know, people like yourself, people that I will always cherish. So that's what I'm doing.
You have any professors you remember most vividly?
Well, Hugh Perkins was, yes, I have many that I still stay in touch with, a lot of them. Dean Collins, Hugh Perkins, who passed away about 2 years ago. He was one of the academic advisors, and he just guided me through those years, years when I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do with my life, but he was there to help me out. And Jack Hamilton, who just recently left, and Adrian Moore in the journalism. But I have journalism, political science. I'm a psychology major. I really enjoyed all of my English teachers, literature, history. I loved LSU. I loved my experience there.
Liz on Highland asks if you have ever thought about running for governor of Louisiana.
Well, you know, I run my mouth too much on television, Liz, but I love my home state. I will do anything to help the Louisiana people. I own a home in Louisiana in East John the Baptist Parish. I had several homes after Katrina to help my family, but I love my home state, and God knows I will continue to support everybody I can.
Well, Donna, we thank you. It's always a pleasure. Congratulations on your continuing success, and when you list all of the people you've worked for, I don't know of anybody in American politics, including James Carville, who has been at the high levels of so many campaigns as you have for the last three decades.
Well, one of the things I want your listeners to know, that throughout the time after Katrina, and many people spent time complaining, I rolled up my sleeves like Carville and his lovely wife, Mary Madeline, who's one of my good friends. But not only did I roll up my sleeve, I spent 3 years working very closely with George W. Bush, and I can't wait to share those photos and those pictures as well. I think that's going to blow some of your partisans out of the water.
Well, you once said, look, I'm a woman, so I like Hillary, I'm black, I like Obama, but I'm also grumpy, so I like John McCain.
And I still like John McCain. Senator McCain is a great friend, a great American, and I thank God for his public service as well.
Well, thank you, Donna Brazil. Good luck to you.
Thank you. God bless Louisiana, and go Tigers. I had to say that.
There you go. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We're joined in studio now by Andrew Vogel and Brenda Perry. And they are involved with the historic Lincoln Theater on Myrtle Street, opened in 1950, and it was one of the centerpieces of the civil rights movement. And it is in the process, at least we hope, of being put back together to its former glory. Let's start with you, Andrew.
Sure.
Andrew Vogel, who is a documentary filmmaker, and he appropriately is doing a piece on the Lincoln Theater. I'm sure you gave some thought to this, and you've got this vacant building that doesn't look like it was the centerpiece of the world in which we live, but it has a remarkable history that I think should be treasured.
Absolutely, and so we basically saw a need for an artist hub, you know, a place where people could perform, and basically exactly what the Lincoln Theater used to be. So LIFF, in association with the Arts Council of Baton Rouge, has developed this mentorship program that actually goes back to May at the film festival where it began. But basically, this mentorship program focuses on the kids of Old South Baton Rouge. So not only will this documentary give these kids a chance to jump in and learn how to film a documentary, but it also give them a chance to help revitalize an important cultural landmark in their own community. So that was kind of the root of that. And you can actually still sign up for this this program. If you go to lifilmfest.org, you can sign up. And we have a screening on Thursday night of a film called I Origins that opens up this program and the shooting of the film. And that's a free filming that you can go see.
And where will that be?
That filming, I can't remember I can't remember the exact location of it, but if you go to if you go to lifilmfest.org, it's literally the first thing that pops up. It says iOrigins.
Well, you said
LIFF. It's at Cinemark.
LIFF is Louisiana International Film Festival, so at Perkins Row this Thursday night.
Cinemark, yeah.
A filming, and Andrew Vogel is a New Orleans native, who began his career in theater, and he is behind the camera and in front of the camera and is working closely with the Louisiana International Film Festival. And one of his friends is Brenda Perry, the founder and executive director of the Louisiana Black History Hall of Fame. And Brenda, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Get a little closer there.
Okay, good morning.
The Black History Hall of Fame owns the Lincoln Theater.
Yes, we do. The Louisiana Black History Hall of Fame owns... proud owners of the Lincoln Theater. We join in thanking all of the partners who have helped us the last 3 years, and this year is the fruition year of trying to make sure that we complete the restoration to bring it back. That's why we're so blessed to have the Louisiana International Film Festival to do a documentary on it. One of the most important things, like you said, in 1949, Dr. Chapman and committee purchased and started a dream, and 65 years later, we're going to reopen to make that dream be another part of the community again. Because, like you said, Andrew, we know that the Lincoln was more than a theater; it was a complex. It had a theater, it had businesses on the second floor, it had the barbershop on the first floor, it had a pharmacy. It had so many services for the community, and we want to bring that back to life.
Well, the Lincoln Theater is at the corner of Myrtle Walk and 13th Street. And there is a beautiful mural on the side of the building now. Who did that?
MOPA, Museum of Public Art. Those murals are the property and the beautiful talentship of Dr. Kevin Harris and his artists that come from throughout the nation, New York, Canada, and right here in Louisiana.
Well, these are some of the people who have been at the Lincoln Theater performing or speaking. Louis Armstrong.
Yes.
The Four Tops.
Yes.
Chuck Berry.
Yes.
Lionel Hampton.
Yes.
Otis Redding.
Yes.
James Brown.
And Nat King Cole.
Nat King Cole.
Yes.
The Ink Spots.
The Ink Spots, you're right.
Duke Ellington.
Yes.
Aretha Franklin.
Okay.
Martin Luther King Jr.
You said it earlier. Number one, the Lincoln Theater stage is one of the most beautiful reasons why we want to make this out of a performing arts center, because we want to let the dreams of young people, future performers, come on that same stage that the awesome people that you just mentioned performed on that stage. And then when it comes to civil rights, we know that the 1953 Baton Rouge bus boycott, UDL, United Defense League legal team, had their office up there on the second floor. So we know that some of the meetings that happened with the strategy were held right there at the Lincoln Theater. So you're right, it's a civil rights site.
Well, it was the first place you could see integrated shows in Baton Rouge, and I'm told you could save soft drink bottle caps and get in free.
Yes, I've heard that too.
Creoles had special days. They could go in, and regular blacks, were the rules different?
That's still a part of our historical, what we're looking at, to do a historical presentation of history and facts like that. Right now, we're trying to develop a timeline that starts from 1949 until present with the different owners and projectionists.
And by the way, that term is coming straight from a press release. I don't particularly like it. Regular blacks?
That's kind of strange to say regular blacks.
But it's right there. And I think
strange
we could,
press
I think
release.
We could phrase that a little better. But
yeah.
Al Sharpton spoke there in 2003.
Yes, that is true. Al Sharpton did speak there. And one of the most important things with the different partners that we've had, we've had over 25 different organizations and individuals that have helped us. One of the most important things that we want people to know is that we're going to bring it back to be a performing arts center, a theater, and a concert hall.
Built in 1950 by Dr. A.L. Chatman. It seats, when it's open, 500 people, 10,000 square feet, two-story, brick veneer, and you bought it for a song, but if it's restored, it will have immense value, not only as far as the building itself, but historically, there's probably no place in Baton Rouge that has as kind of significance as this place.
You're very right. There is no place that has a... South Baton Rouge is awesome within itself, and the Lincoln Theater is one of the landmarks. Saturday night, from 6 to 8 p.m., we're having a Name Your Seat fundraising campaign because we've done so much with other partners, fixed the roof, removed the asbestos, the lead pipe, the lead paint. Now we're starting to get with people to engage the community to come and help us restore those seats. From 6 to 8, people can come down, get information about what it will cost to restore the seats, how they can help. We'll be there from 6 to 8. The Louisiana Film Commission is helping to sponsor that. So we're asking the public to come down between 6 and 8, get information on how to name your seat so that they can name the seat in their name in honor of them or in honor of a loved one. And we'll put a plaque on the back of the seat so that they can have a part of restoring the Lincoln Theater.
And that will be
Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Lincoln Theater. The Louisiana Film Commission, International Film Commission is helping us to develop that event. Of course, we do not have electricity yet, but they're bringing in lights, camera, and action, and some fans, and all kind of a goodies to be able to help
hopefully
us with
some
it.
Musicians
right.
as well.
Hopefully some musicians.
But yeah, I was just going to mention that you can RSVP for that event at lifilmfest.org. If you just click events, it's the first thing that pops up, the Name Your Seat fundraiser, and that's this Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. Hope to see you all there.
All right.
At the Lincoln.
At the Lincoln.
Film that you spoke of earlier at Perkins Row, that's Thursday night, 7:30, and you can RSVP at Louisiana Film Fest.
LIFilmfest.org.
And the documentary will be filming the kickoff reception for the Name Your Seat fundraising campaign. And what compelled you to get immersed in this, Andrew?
Me, myself,
yes.
Personally? I've been involved with LIFF, you know, since the festival. I've been working as their press liaison, and I saw it as an opportunity to jump on board, and I wanted to be a part of the mentorship program, and they wanted to do this documentary, so it just seemed like a great opportunity for me to jump in and be a part of this, be a part of the community, help a mm-hmm. good thing become revitalized, because it is important for artists to have a hub, a place where these up-and-comers can go and perform and show their talents, you know.
Well, Andrew's an active member of the film community, executive editor at Louisiana Film and Video Magazine, and recently worked with Robert Redford and Nick Nolte, right?
I sure did, yeah.
Yeah, how was that experience?
That was one of the greatest experiences ever.
Those guys are ancient, though.
Yeah, they are. They're legends. They're veterans of acting, and Robert Redford's a legend of directing and acting, and I got to work with them directly. You know, I had two scenes directly with them. It was a really, really amazing experience.
Well, thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Brenda. And good luck to you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Interesting development at the Lincoln Theater. We'll be back with Jim Caldwell in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. And we have two gentlemen involved with air travel in this area, the Greater Baton Rouge Metropolitan Airport. Jim Caldwell, let's start with you, the Marketing and Air Service Development Manager. If you haven't been to the airport in the last 6 months, it looks like a new airport.
It does. The new rotunda is well-received. We have this beautiful floor-to-ceiling glass windows. You can, for the first time, look out on the runway if you like watching the aircraft take off and land. New seating. Each seat has a power outlet. So two of the things people want most at airports are free Wi-Fi and adequate electrical outlets, and we have both now with the new rotunda. In fact, we have a new charging station at the beginning of Concourse A where there are additional power outlets.
It just looks so much better, though. It really is a beautiful place. It's not a big airport, but I think in the past, some folks in Baton Rouge, we're talking 20, 30 years ago, might not have been proud of their airport. But now I think there is reason to be.
I think it rates well with any airport of its size in the country. And the new area also alleviates the congestion we had. We kind of had a bottleneck at the old TSA check-in point where you had TSA check-in, the exit, and a very small waiting area. It was a pre-9/11 design. Before 9/11, you could access the gates without being ticketed. After 9/11, you had to be a ticketed passenger. So this took care of that problem, where now those people that can't access the secure side but are waiting on arriving passengers or seeing them off, they have the nice arrival court, which was the former rotunda. And now, of course, we have the new rotunda on the secure side. And new restaurants as well, New American Wow Cafe and Wingery, PJ's Coffee. And those people really love the new food. And you can get a latte and all those type of specialty coffees you couldn't previously get.
Jim Caldwell with us. He is the Marketing and Air Service Development Manager. And in short order, we're going to hear from his cohort, Jason Wilson, who is the Administrative and Development Manager at the Baton Rouge Metropolitan Airport. Does this translate into more travel? How is it looking as far as the number of people coming and going from our city?
In that regard, it's stable. It's as you know, there have been a lot of mergers. In fact, if you take the four largest carriers, the three network carriers, American, Delta, and United, and of course, U.S. Airways and American are merging, and then add Southwest to it, those four carriers control over 82% of the seating capacity in the industry. And, since 2006, there's been a steady decline in airline flights and seats across the country. We've held our own, but it's, for midsize and smaller airports, the trend has been for less rather than more. But, we've been the beneficiary of increased flights with the existing carriers. Delta's bringing in larger jets now. They've got a Airbus A319, which is a mainline, over 100 seats, with first economy, comfort, and coach. In the fall, they're bringing in a second mainline jet, so we'll have two mainline jets. And most of the regional jets Delta flies in are the larger ones that have first class and coach.
David Brown writes, "I like the new space, but miss the birds inside the rotunda."
it's a little more difficult for them to fly through the front door and get into the rotunda to now, but we did previously have quite a few in it.
Well, the men with us have been there during this sprucing up the airport, Jim Caldwell and Jason Wilson, and obviously after Katrina, the airport was flooded with a lot of people who would have been using the New Orleans facility, and some of that has continued, but things have gotten back to normal. For a while, we had direct flights to Washington, D.C. That has changed. But as far as the flights that are available now, you can go a lot of places. Usually, you have to make one stop, but generally, you can go anywhere you want to in the United States.
That's right, and really, even the world, with one, at most two connections, because by having frequent jet flights with all the what they call the network carriers, which are the ones that have the global alliances, the partnerships with international carriers, you could go from a Baton Rouge to one of the hub cities, then to London or Paris or any other number of international hubs, and then connect anywhere.
Well, the Baton Rouge Airport has been around now for over 60 years, and it looks better than it ever has. And you have how many airliners?
Four right now,
four?
American, Delta, United, and U.S. Airways, but okay. American and U.S. Airways are merging.
And with Jim is Jason Wilson, the Administrative and Development Manager, and he is here to talk about an important workshop that's going on. He is the point person for the Aviation Business Park at the Baton Rouge Airport. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about the workshop.
Well, this is our 9th annual Small Business Opportunities Workshop. Over the years, we've reached out to the small business community, mostly the small minority business community. Over the last couple of years, we've created the Small Business Enterprise Program, which is open to all small businesses, not minority small businesses. And it's an effort to reach out and provide new opportunities. Just to give a just, over the past 3 years, the airport has provided opportunities of over $2.2 million to the small business community through federal government projects that we have out at the airport. We have a current annual participation rate of average of 11%. And we've been doing good, and we're continuing to reach out to the community. It's just another step of us reaching out to that small business community and provide open opportunities, whether it be vendors to the restaurants, vendors to car rental agencies, or construction firms, design firms, and so on and so forth.
But the workshop is tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
So 8:30 to 2 at the Renaissance in Baton Rouge, the yes. hotel on Bluebonnet. Can people still get businesses if they want to participate?
Yes, they can go to the website at www.flybtr.com and register there. It's a free event. Please come out. We welcome any and all businesses. Also, we welcome the prime firms, that the big firms, because it's a networking event as well, where we network those small businesses with those prime firms on these contracts.
Well, the number is 225-355-0333 if you want to correspond with Jason or his staff or yes. Jim by telephone, 225-355-0333. And it is a free event for all companies interested in pursuing work at the Baton Rouge Metropolitan Airport. Attendees can network with other local firms of all sizes and learn about some opportunities at the Baton Rouge Airport. So it's certainly something that has been popular. This is the ninth time you've done it, so yes. you must have a fairly good response from the community, or you wouldn't keep doing it.
Definitely.
Well, where do you see the airport going 5-10 years from now, Jim and Jason? You think we're going to continue to be about what we are? Are we going to get bigger, smaller? How's it going to be?
Well, you know, in addition to the air service that Jim does, you know, we're also working on customer service. It starts with the airport employees and expanding out to the tenants. So, you know, providing that the customer base that comes through the airport with great customer service is a great part of customer retainage and promotion of using the convenience of their airport facilities. Remember, it's their airport facilities. You know, so also, you know, we have the aviation business park taking off, 700 plus acres of development. We have various economic development incentives, enterprise zone, foreign trade zone, and so on and so forth. We have competitive leasing rates and some great packages that we're taking off for economic development out at the airport. And as you know, we have several big name tenants out at the airport, just to name a few. You know, Coca-Cola, All-Star North, the Loomis facility, of course, and several other big name tenants out at the airport.
Of all types, ABC yeah. Auto Auctions. ABC,
yeah.
You know, obviously the runway accessibility is critical for a tenant that wants, that needs runway access, but we have land that, you know, is unrelated to aviation, such as ABC Auto Auctions or Loomis. Or
so any and all aviation and mm-hmm. non-aviation related
well,
businesses.
Well, right there on Harding Boulevard, you got a lot of shopping areas. You can yes. you can do a lot near the airport.
Yes.
And of course, if you run afoul of the law, you're likely to.
you know, actually, that's one of the things the tenants like, because, you know, it's patrolled by airport police, the sheriff. Facilities headquarters are right there. That's one of the features that some of the tenants have mentioned that attracted them.
As far as a medium-sized city like ours, capital city, say, how does our airport in Baton Rouge compare with, say, Little Rock or Jackson, Mississippi?
Well, we're comparable to those. We're the second largest airport in terms of passenger enplanements and deplanements in the state after New Orleans. Obviously, our proximity to New Orleans impacts us, but nevertheless, we're the second largest in the state and really in much of the region. But we're comparable to those airports. Those airports have the benefit of not being near a larger airport where mm-hmm. they lose traffic, have leakage to it. That's one thing that's beneficial to them that helps with their numbers. But we're comparable.
All
it's
right.
You know, Jackson, you know, they're losing their Southwest service. They've been pulling back and leaving a lot of smaller markets. So that's one of the negatives that's hit them recently.
297-5633, Inkstershow at WRKF.org. Two gentlemen who know air travel in Baton Rouge probably better than anybody else, Jason Wilson and Jim Caldwell from the Baton Rouge Airport, are with us for our remaining time. Melanie says that She notes that parking is less expensive at the Baton Rouge Airport than it is in New Orleans. How do the fares compare?
The fares, if we routinely, I write the pricing managers responsible for BTR monthly, sometimes bi-monthly, and I think to the point where sometimes they probably get tired of my emails. But we've been able to convince them to price more competitively, particularly with New Orleans. So the gap is the lowest it's been in a long time now. So the fares are better. And to her point, you know, parking is inexpensive. It's less expensive. It's right in front of the terminal. Our tagline is fly easy, and that's really what it is. You come in, you park, you can go through security quickly, and it's going to save you a lot of time and aggravation. Mm-hmm. And people certainly should always check BTR. They might be
surprised. The rental car facilities are right next to the terminal, so it's not a long walk or drive. You're in and out pretty quickly usually.
Yeah, and the best way for us to expand the airport and grow is to use what we have. And we do have good load factors. The percentage of seats filled are close to 80%, and that's a good number.
Henry asked about the flight times. Are they usually on time? Do you keep a you have a percentage of the flights being on time or not? Don't you?
We do, and we keep. We, for our airport commission, we do a report each commission meeting showing how we compare to other airports in the state and region, and they're all very close. You're talking about just a few percentage points difference in on-time performance among the many, but we've been running among the five, six airports we compare to in the region, Lafayette, New Orleans, Gulfport, et cetera. We've been running number two so far this year in best on-time performance.
So what does that mean? 80%, 70%?
That you're exactly right, low 80s. It's usually around 80 to 83% range on time.
Well, that would seem to be good. It seems like for those of us who travel on occasion, we're late more than 17% of the time.
Right.
And sometimes weather conditions are such that it can't be avoided.
Exactly. And the truth is the vast majority of flights at BTR and most airports are on time, and the cancellation rate is usually under 3%. And it's a small percentage that are canceled, but if you're in that small percentage, it doesn't matter. Your flight was canceled.
Well, the air travel changed dramatically since 9/11, and now, of course, security is tighter. How has that changed things at the airport?
Well, it's obviously post 9/11. You have to be ticketed to go beyond security, and they have watch lists. They have lots of new technology. Better screening machines, which we have the most modern one, and TSA follows a lot of new techniques in terms of behavior.
Well, the scanner. There was a lot of controversy over that. Some people thought it was an invasion of privacy. Some still do. And occasionally somebody refuses to be scanned. What happens then, Jason?
Well, we kind of let the TSA pretty much handle that operation, but we can capitalize on the fact that, it's a very short time in going through the security checkpoint. I think the wait time is less than 2 minutes for going through the security checkpoint for each passenger. So it moves pretty fast. Although the security measures are in place, we have no control over that. That's a federal program. But we do aim at keeping the open flow and keeping the passengers and getting them through the checkpoint as fast as possible.
If someone doesn't want to go through the scanner, they have the option as an alternative, a pat down. But the scanner, they put in new software technology to where the image you see of the person is just almost like a stick cartoon kind of drawing. It's not that original, very lifelike, image that was so controversial.
Yep.
So.
And I can say also we do have one of the friendliest staff of TSA employees. So they also provide a little greeting for the passengers when they come through. It gives a customer a little bit more easiness in coming through the security checkpoint.
All right. Nicholas on Nicholson says, it seems like every time I have to park at the airport, the lot is nearly full. That's what Nicholas says. Is he just getting there at bad times, or is that a common observation.
Actually, that's a great thing that's going on.
I've never heard complaints about getting the space, but I have heard people say I had to drive around a bit. Now, obviously, if you go to the top floor of the deck, you can get a space pretty easily, but most people want to be covered.
By the way, we're not talking about a massive airport here, and if I remember right, it's $7 a day to park in one location and $10 at another, and the two are like 2 or 3 yards apart, so...
Yeah.
Maybe Nicholas is trying to get in the $10 parking places. He'd get a little more exercise if he go to the $7 parking places, and he would save money, and he would be healthier.
Yes. Yeah, they're both a pretty short walk.
But believe me, in other places, it costs a lot more than $10 a day to park your car at an airport.
I'm sorry, your time driving to another airport, use the government 58 cents a mile, cost. You really have to add a couple hundred just in your cost of going to another airport.
Is there any air carrier in the offing that you're courting right now?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, with all the mergers, there when you look at what's left, there's a limited number. The hub carriers are our best prospects because we don't have too many destinations where we can fill a 100-plus seat jet just to that city, and most of the non-hub type carriers are flying those type jets. So additional hub flights, such as United's expressed an interest in potentially adding a Denver or Chicago flight. Americans talked about Chicago. Those are the best prospects.
Well, Jim and Jason, thank you so much. And reminder, if you want to participate in the workshop tomorrow, the number to call is 931-9098. That'll work. And we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.